I'm excited about wrapping up our X's and O's series. We've been talking about relationships for the last 3 weeks or so, and I have found it really helpful. It's always helpful. This is some of the most challenging teaching that I do. It's not as exciting. Revival next Sunday will be much, much more exciting, I promise you. But I have learned that this is absolutely necessary because I don't want to just put a Band-Aid on something that requires surgery. I don't want to just, pat something that needs some real TLC in order to heal. And I realize that relationships for us are a challenge. All of our relationships are a challenge. We're living in a day and an hour when our relationships are more strained than ever. Not just our marriage relationships, our intimate relationships, family relationships, people that are closest to us, but it's our work relationships, it's our friend relationships, it's those that are a couple of layers outside of the intimate relationships. It's amazing to me how somebody gets something in their crawl about someone else, and they go to social media with the passive-aggressive statements, and they're targeting one person. They're targeting one person, but they want all 1,000 of their friends to think it's them. And so then everybody starts coming. I hope it's not me. I hope it's not me. Did I do something wrong? I hope you love me. Do you love me? We struggle in our relationships. So if we can do better, if we can learn, if we can grow in the area of our relationships, then our lives are going to be so much better. I learned the other day how to know when a woman's mad at you. You ready for this? You know a woman's mad at you, number one, when she's silent. Number two, when she's yelling. Number three, when she acts the same. Four, when she acts different. Five, when she smiles. Six, when she cries. Seven, when she says she's fine. Eight, when she murders you. That's how you know if a woman is mad at you. Let me read James chapter 3 today, and we're going to just break these verses down, and honestly, I really feel like and sense this is one of the most important messages I've ever given in all of my ministry, and I'm not feeling 100%. I brought some Honduras home with me, but I couldn't miss today because I feel like this is so important. And if you'll get ready, take some notes, lean in, and say, "Hey, how can this benefit me?" I promise you that you're going to be blessed by the word of the Lord today. James chapter 3, beginning at verse number 13. It's on the screen if you want to follow there. But he says, if you are wise and understand God's ways, prove it by living an honorable life, doing good works with the humility that comes from wisdom. Circle that word wisdom. Underline that, highlight that in some way because it's going to be important. Verse 14, but if you are bitterly jealous and there is selfish ambition in your heart, don't cover up the truth with boasting and lying. For jealousy and selfishness are not God's kind of wisdom. Such things are earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. For wherever there is jealousy and selfish ambition, there you will find disorder and evil of every kind. But the wisdom from above is first of all pure. It is also peace-loving, gentle at times, and willing to yield to others. It is full of mercy and the fruit of good deeds. It shows no favoritism and is always sincere. And those who are peacemakers will plant seeds of peace and reap a harvest of righteousness. Man, I mean, honestly, you know, come to the music and let's have an altar call. That, those verses are so powerful to me. Let me sum all of that up by saying, I believe we would have fewer problems if we had more wisdom. We often do foolish things. That's what the Bible calls them. You may have another word for them, or might would want to describe them in a less combative way, or you know, just claim ignorance. But we often do foolish things unintentionally. Many of the things we do are unintentional. If you're doing things intentionally, that's probably a whole different message. But often, I think all of us, I don't know anyone who wakes up this morning, rolls out of bed and says, I'm going to see what I can do today to just create havoc in my home. I just woke up and just stretching and, oh man, had a good night's sleep. Let me see what I can do to mess up my marriage today. I give all of us more credit than that. So that tells me that we do things unintentionally. We fall into things. We struggle with things. We pull from our own experience or from the things that we've seen lived before us for many, many, many years. We pull from that repertoire, if you will, of action or ways of thinking. And then before you know it, we do have these struggles and we do have these situations. And here's the truth. For many of us, we provoke the exact opposite behavior of what we want. We invite people to treat us in the ways that we do not want them to treat us. So let's talk about that. How do we figure that out? How do we heal that? How do we fix that in our lives? Because we have to win with wisdom. We need wisdom so that we can win in our relationships. And here's the deal. Wisdom doesn't eliminate all of our problems. It does minimize our problems. It is going to make our problems better, but it doesn't eliminate them. But if we could somehow shrink the stress in our relationships, I mean, just think about your relationship, the most intimate relationships in your lives, the person you're married to, the person you're related to, the person that you work closest with, your high school best friend. Just think, if you could shrink the stress in your relationships, how much better would your life be just instantaneously? It'd be massive, because that is the primary source of stress in your life, is relationship stress. So I think it's interesting when you read verse 13, and I just want to kind of volley back and forth here just a little bit, if you still have your Bible open, or it'll be on the screen for you. But you read verse 13, if you are wise and understand God's ways, prove it by living an honorable life, doing good works with the humility that comes from wisdom. Because wisdom is a way of relating. It is something you do not know. It's something you do. It is seen in your actions. I don't want to be too direct here today, but I just need to teach the Word of God and just say it the only way I really can hear it and understand it. But the world is filled with educated fools. It's people who know lots but do little, because social graces are missing. People are rude by default. People are ugly, and God doesn't like ugly. So how do we be wise? The evidence of wisdom is seen in your relationships, not in your words. So what we need is life over lips. In other words, I need to walk like I talk. I need to live and do as I profess in my life. I need disposition. I need better better facial communication. All communication, 97% of communication is nonverbal. That means the majority of what I communicate is not my words, it's my facial expressions. I'm a whole paragraph right here. So if communication is only 3% what I say and everything else how I act and my mannerisms, whew, Lord, all of us need healing and help. But then verses 14, 15, and 16, he says, if you're bitterly jealous or if there is selfish ambition in your heart, don't cover up the truth with boasting and lying. I've had some of those friends in my life who were compulsive liars. You say, wow, a friend like that? Yeah, it's someone I love. It's people that I care about, but I cannot have daily, ongoing. If I see them at a funeral, see them at a wedding, see them at a church event somewhere, I can hug their neck, I can spend a few minutes with them, but I know the risk that I take. I know that involving myself in too much conversation or going very far into this relationship is only going to bring me frustration because they are compulsive, they are bitter, and they lie. They try to cover it up with a lot of boasting. They always brag about how wonderful they are, and something in my nature wants to disagree with all that, so it's just better for me to stay away. But the typical ways we relate often is bitterness and jealousy and selfish ambition. So he says, don't respond with boasting and lying. And then verse 18, he says, those who are peacemakers will plant seeds of peace and reap a harvest of righteousness. Because every day in every relationship, you are planting seeds. Now here's the question. What kind of seeds are you planting? Because every single day, like it or not, intentional or not, planning or not, every day we are planting seeds that are going to bring up a harvest. Every day our actions are going to demand a consequence. You say, no, we've been married so long, we just forget that ever happened. No, you don't. No, you don't. Unless you're Wonder Woman and Superman and y'all got married and you got a cape hiding beneath that plaid shirt. Everyone plants seeds in their relationship. Are they seeds of trust or distrust? Anger or peace? All of us want to plant seeds of peace. We can plant seeds of peace by being wise. So how can we be wise? What does wisdom look like in our relationships? And this is where I'm going to be for the remaining moments we have together. There are six ways that we can win with wisdom. And I encourage you to write these down or type them into your phone or take a picture of the screens that are up as we go along, because every one of these, you may not be able to process all of them in the next few moments as I teach them, but I promise you, if you will go back and spend time talking about some of these things with those with whom you are in relationship with, I promise you they will help you. But the first way we can win with wisdom is this: if I want to be wise, I won't compromise my integrity. If I want to be wise, I won't compromise my integrity. He said it in verse 17. He said, wisdom from above is first of all pure. Wisdom comes from a pure place. What does pure mean? It means uncorrupted. It means clean. It means unpolluted. It's clear. It's untainted. When I was in Honduras this week, God bless those people, but the government releases water one time a week from their source high in the mountains, and they release it one time a week. And so the people in their various huts and shanties and just unbelievable living conditions. Tanya, you called me this week on speakerphone with your mom in the car. Good to see you. Annette, can I tell you that she is cancer-free? God has done a great, great work in her life. Give God praise for that. But they called me, and you can't even, I'll show you a picture of where I was standing after the service, because you cannot believe I was in the absolute slums of Honduras, and it's what they would just say, these are one of our neighborhoods, and I'm giving God a praise break on a dirt road, and running right beside me is raw sewage. So while I was worshiping God, I was also smelling, whoo, Lord have mercy. But water is released one time a week, and they have these, I don't know, probably 4 foot wide, 4 foot long, 3 foot wide, and maybe 3 or 4 feet deep, but these, you know, kind of large plastic containers. And when the water comes down, they're able to fill up that container, and that's all the water they have for the week. That's the water they bathe in. That's the water they drink. That's the water they cook with. But it's also the water that their dogs and various random dogs and animals drink from. For some reason, horses like to urinate in those wells. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Unbelievable conditions. It's not pure. And he said, wisdom is pure. That means it's clear. It's unpolluted. It's untainted. That's what integrity is. Wisdom starts in the heart. Starts in the heart. That means I will not violate my conscience nor compromise my conviction or live a double life. If you're in this room today, I love you. I love you. This is your church. Don't miss next weekend's revival. But let me be a good pastor and tell you that if you are living a double life, I call you to repentance. I'm not talking about how it happened or where it came from or what took place, or this, that, or the other. Reach for integrity. Refuse to compromise your integrity. I love what the wise man said in Proverbs 2 and 7. He grants a treasure of common sense to the honest. He is a shield to those who walk with integrity. It's a shield to those who walk with integrity. If I am integral in my dealings, if I'm integral in my business opportunities, if I'm integral in my relationships, God says, I see your honesty, I see your transparency, and I am going to guard you. Wait a minute, it seems like the guy that's cheating is getting ahead. It seems like he's making more money. It seems as though he's getting more bids, winning more bids than I. It seems like they are getting ahead. David felt the same way one time. He said, I nearly fell out when I saw the wicked prospering. I nearly lost my mind. I nearly lost my heart for God. My foot almost slipped when I saw the prosperity of the wicked, but I just kept doing the right thing and the right thing and the right thing. And guess what? The right thing always wins. Be a person, be a man, be a woman, be a relationship of integrity. Why is integrity listed first? Because all relationships are built on trust. If you do not have trust one for another, then your relationship is in crisis. There is no trust without truth. Honesty is the bedrock of relationships. This is already good teaching, isn't it? If I want to be wise, I won't compromise my integrity. Number two, if I want to be wise, I won't antagonize your anger. If I want to be wise, I won't antagonize your anger. That means I won't push your hot buttons. If you live with someone, you know their button or buttons. Some of us have multiple buttons. And if you live with someone, you know what gets on their nerves. And ooh, you'll do it to them if they make you just mad enough. But if I want to be wise, I won't antagonize your anger. I won't provoke your rage. I won't egg you on. This is a big one because it's a source of sadness in many relationships. Verse 17, again, he said, wisdom is peace-loving. It's peace-loving. Wise people are peacemakers. and work at maintaining harmony. Not always looking for a fight or defensive. They don't carry a chip on their shoulder. Here's a fact. If you're around someone long enough, you will figure out what irritates them. You know, if I were to spend the rest of my time here today polling couples in this room, what irritates her? I mean, you wouldn't even have to think about it. You know. What is it that really gets on his nerves? You would pop it out so fast, multiple things, because we know what irritates the other. And then, having that knowledge of what irritates them, when they hurt you in an argument, you use that weapon. And it's never good. It's never productive. Proverbs 20:3, avoiding a fight is a mark of honor. Only fools insist on quarreling. I have been a fool so many times. Just insisting. No, we're going to fight about this. No, we're going to fuss about this. We're going to be mad about this. We're going to lean into this. Only fools do that. W. James said, wisdom is the art of knowing what to overlook. Man, help us, help blind us sometimes, Lord. Help us know what to overlook. What are some behaviors that provoke anger? There's comparing, there's condemning, there's contradicting. If I'm comparing you to someone else, then I'm saying things like, why can't you be like so-and-so? Or, you're just like your mother. Second Corinthians chapter 10 teaches us it's unwise to compare. Another behavior that provokes anger is condemning someone, laying on guilt. You should be ashamed of yourself. Can't believe you would do this, say this. Or there's contradicting, another behavior that provokes anger. Maybe if you've ever had that friend that corrects every detail of every story you tell. It's irritating. Before long, you will not tell a story around them. When they're in the group and you've got a great story, you'll say, no, I'll tell you later. Because they're motivated, they're driven by this need to be right. And so they correct everything, contradict everything that is said. Proverbs 14:29, people with understanding control their anger. A hot temper shows great foolishness. Number 3. If I want to be wise, this is important, I won't minimize your feelings. If I want to be wise, I won't minimize your feelings. Because in verse 17, he said, wisdom is gentle at all times. Gentle. The Living Bible says courteous. The NIV uses considerate. Gentle or courteous or considerate at all times. Philippians 4:5, let everyone see that you are considerate in all you do. To be considerate means I'm mindful of the feelings of others. I'm taking you into consideration. This is counter to our very selfish society that considers no one else's feelings, just does whatever it is they want to do, regardless of whomever is hurt by it. So I have to try being considerate instead of only reacting to what people say while ignoring what they're feeling. Try not to invalidate others' feelings just because you don't feel the same. What does that look like? Someone says, it's so cold in here. No, it's not. You say, Pastor Dale, is it that simple? It really is. Because we're looking for this grand, big stuff, but that's how we minimize one another's feelings, constantly arguing with one another. Someone says, I feel ugly. And the response is, that's nonsense. You're not ugly. If I don't feel what you feel, then your feelings are illogical and invalid. But sometimes people feel the way they feel. Sometimes they really are cold and you're not. So what's the better response? It's cold in here. Let me see if I can find you a blanket. These cars that have dual AC systems. It's been cold, and I'm taking kids to school, and sometimes I've got the heat on 75, and my 13-year-old has the AC on 60. There's something wrong with him. Pray for him. I don't know what it is. But we don't spend our 15 minutes on the way to school arguing about how he feels or how I feel. It's his feelings. The typical responses to feelings we don't feel is to belittle. If you had an ounce of brains, or we play psychologist. Listen, if I need a psychologist, I'll pay for one. I don't want to go to lunch with one. The reason you feel, let me tell you what's going on in your life. Elle is taking a class right now, a psychology class, and they're right now on the subject of dreams. And so here recently she had to make detailed notes of all the dreams she had for a week. And it's funny because I keep hearing this come up in conversation, but it's almost as though this psychology teacher, you know, she's not a psychologist, but teaching psychology has all of these kids coming in and she's doing dream interpretation for them. And it could be the craziest thing. I dreamed that my pinky fingernail was 4 inches long. What does that mean? It's just, you know, I don't know that it means anything. Does it have to mean something? But no, we'll come up with these elaborate exclamations about what this means. I don't know, maybe it grew long so you could really get your ear cleaned out. I don't know. Not everything has to mean something. Not everything has to be explained perfectly. But oftentimes we play psychologist. We reach out to multiple people for advice. And I've learned it's not really the advice of multiple people we're looking for. We're looking for someone who ultimately agrees with what we've already decided to do anyway. That was free, not in my notes. We're looking for someone who will validate, who will respect what it is that we already have decided to do. Proverbs 15:4, kind words bring life, but cruel words crush your spirit. I know we all came up singing, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will always. I know that's not what you sung. It's not what I sung, but it's the truth. Words hurt. Words hurt, and they hurt especially in our relationships. Because those that we love the most, their words weigh thousands of pounds. They are heavy, and they are meaningful, and they can cut or they can build. So if I want to be wise, I won't minimize your feelings. Number four, if I want to be wise, I won't criticize your suggestions. Winning in relationships. If I want to be wise, I won't criticize your suggestions. Wisdom, verse 17, is willing to yield to others. Willing to yield to others. The ESV says, open to reason. The Living Bible says, allows discussion. I love seeing the various ways it is interpreted, but wisdom is a willingness to yield to others. That means I'm not always right. you're not always right. Two are always better than one. So if I'm demanding always to be right or critical of the suggestions that you make, I'm being stubborn. I'm being defensive. I want to be open to reason. I want to be approachable. I want to be willing to listen and to learn. So what would happen if we, before we make up our mind, we would get the input that is necessary to make a good decision? And if you disagree with an idea, will you hear out an explanation of the idea before coming to a final decision? I may not agree with what you're saying, but I want to hear. Many times, I'm a very decisive person. I don't argue that. But many, many times my mind has been changed because I listened to input. I've heard someone out. I wanted to see what their reasoning is. And after hearing their reasoning, I couldn't argue. Man, that's right. That's the better way of approaching this. But you always have to compare that with the idea and the question. Am I sure that what I think is being decisive isn't actually being domineering in my relationship? Have you ever reconsidered a final decision? I know this is, I kind of see the yellow light coming up to the intersection. The light turns yellow, slow down, don't speed up. I see the yellow light that tells me in the spirit to slow down for just a moment and make sure that this point is clear and understood, because oftentimes, I remember we had a young couple come to our church back home, and ultimately it was a win. It was great. They ended up being a part of our staff, and God did great things in their life. But I remember, you know, some of the first interactions we had with them. First time maybe we went to lunch or we went to someone's house and we're having like a little fellowship. I never will forget him tapping his iced tea glass with a fork, and his wife jumping up. I see heads shaking over there, like, uh-uh. Wife jumping up and running for the pitcher of tea. And Kristen and I are looking at each other like, oh, what? That still happens? Don't misunderstand me, because if you're someone who loves to serve your spouse and it's your honor and privilege to do that, absolutely do that. That's beautiful. We need more of that. More of that in our relationships. But if you're the one who taps the glass, don't you think it would be better if you just said, hey, babe, I'd love to have some more tea? Doesn't that sound better than ding, 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 ding? I'm meddling now, ain't I? I'm just off in it. But sometimes the domineering individual, they end up marrying the very weak and passive spouse who probably had a father that was the same way. And then their kids are raised in that culture, that environment, and they're scared to death to say a word. And because everyone serves and everyone just, I mean, reveres, and everything that comes out of your mouth is just, the most profound wisdom, you've put yourself in a position that no one can disagree with you. And you say things like, hey, preach to me, pastor. But you don't really mean that. And you say things like, if I ever get out of line, just thump me on the head. But if I were to thump you on the head, we'd end up rolling in the floor fighting. Because you don't really mean that. It just sounds good, because we have learned what to say in order to function in society. And we way past a Band-Aid. I got the scalpel dug all the way in right now, cutting way down deep. Sometimes We want to be wise. And I hear you saying, well, no, I'm the authority in my house. Be the authority in your house. Be that. Be the final decision. Be that. But also be open to reason and to other opinions. And just entertain, at least the first Tuesday of every month, just entertain the possibility that maybe, just maybe, you're wrong every once in a while. Ooh, Lord. Proverbs 18 and 15. Intelligent people are always ready to learn. Their ears are open for knowledge. Let me get off that. Number five. We all right? Everybody okay? Revival next week. Don't miss it. If I want to be wise, I won't emphasize your mistakes. If I want to be wise, I won't emphasize your mistake. Wisdom, verse 17, is full of mercy and the fruit of good deeds. Full of mercy. It's wise to show grace to people when they blow it. It's wise to cut people slack when they mess up. You know why? Because I may need it too. It's wise to be forgiving of someone else's blunders because I may make the same mistake. I may fumble the ball on the same exact yard line at some point in my life. So who is the wisest in the universe? Well, that's God, obviously. Who is the most merciful? That's God, too. You think there's any connection? Wisdom and mercy go hand in hand. Mercy gives people what they need, not what they deserve. So how high do you rank in the mercy category? Do you jump on every fault or blunder? Great move, Klutzo! Or you're always breaking stuff. We probably need to be kinder to Mom, Elle, because she's always losing her glasses. You lost your glasses again? What if we would be merciful? Do you continually bring up the past? Do you beat down or build up? According to best-selling author Scott Shawls, he said, shame is the greatest thing people struggle with in our society. We're ashamed of so many things that it will make us isolate from godly friendships and pull back from healthy, affirming community. Because shame is so prevalent. Proverbs 17 and 9, love prospers when a fault is forgiven, but dwelling on it separates close friends. Love does not always keep a record of wrongs. The problem isn't the accuracy of the wrongs. The problem is the damage it does to the relationship. I'm not saying there are not things that need to be dealt with. They absolutely need to be dealt with, and things that are unresolved and not taken care of and not communicated through, they will keep coming up time and time and time again. But I'm also not saying, you know what, I forgive you, and we're letting that go, and that's done, and it's over. But I'm going to keep a little piece of this in my back pocket. And at the right time, on the right day, I'm going to reach back in and pull this out, and I'm going to use it as a weapon against you. Rehearsing the past does nothing to alter or improve the future. So again, we're not talking about a relationship with no accountability or letting someone continue in hurtful, destructive patterns of behavior or turning a blind eye to major issues. We're talking about being critical of, unforgiving, belittling towards, and always focused on the simple human mistakes people around us make. sum it all up to say this: we demand perfection when perfection isn't possible. Number six. It's the last one. If I want to be wise, I won't be phony. If I want to be wise, I won't be phony. That means I won't lie to you. I won't cheat you. I won't trick you. I won't fake you out. I won't take advantage of or disguise my intentions or deliberately mislead you. Verse 17, wisdom shows no favoritism and is always sincere. The King James said, it's without hypocrisy. The CEV says, it's genuine. I want to be wise, therefore I won't be phony. So hear me, the place you will fail in your marriage is the place that you keep secret from your spouse. Because phonies fail. And wise people aren't phonies. They're real, they're genuine, they're authentic, they're transparent. The places where people fake it most, it's online and on dates. We got filters for our profile pics. Some people are so filtered. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing. I just want to start typing stop, 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 stop. Everything's blurred. Stop. Because when we run into you in the grocery store, we're going to be like, oh, whoa, hey, are you sick? Everything okay? Your profile picture. Don't do that. We struggle in our relationships. Has this been real enough? Raw enough, maybe? Revival next week. It's going to be great. But our relationships, man, it doesn't matter what you do in life, doesn't matter what you do in church. Relationships, there is a tension and a struggle. And we struggle in our horizontal relationships so much that we need the vertical to work. I won't be able to live the word until I know the Lord. In my opinion, it's impossible to live up to any of this if I'm not committed to Jesus. That doesn't mean be perfect. That doesn't mean that, I'm killing every 10 commandment, I'm awesome. It doesn't mean I've just got it all together and I'm brother great stuff. But my heart is pointed in the right direction. I'm bent toward faithfulness. I mess up. I drop the ball. I fail. I falter. I make mistakes. But if you ever see me with dust on my pants, I've done my best to knock it off, but I'm moving in the right direction. I've got to get my vertical relationship right. That's why Psalms 111 and 10 says, fear of the Lord is the foundation of true wisdom. God, I need you. It's not fear of the Lord like, oh, Lord, you scare me. No, it's this awe, it's reverence. It's, God, you're so powerful and amazing. And I don't know why you called me to do what I do. I don't know why you put me in the place you put me, but Lord, if you believe in me, then I'm going to look in this mirror and do my best to believe in me. But it's this fear. That is the beginning and the foundation of true wisdom. Wisdom begins with the Lord, and better relationships in my life flow out from there. That's how I win with wisdom. I get the up relationship right and allow it to guide and set the pace for my other relationships. You may be in the room today and you've suffered a broken horizontal relationship. You may be living in a strained relationship right now. And you would say, Pastor Darrell, I've never thought about it this way. I've never looked at it from this viewpoint, but come to think of it, my relationship with him has been a little strained. The spiritual in my life has not been what it needs to be. And maybe that's why there are so many challenges I'm dealing with. If that's you, listen. Don't sweat that. And don't feel condemned by that. It's all right to feel conviction. It's all right to feel something that says, hey, get that right. It's okay. I'm not trying to minimize that. I want you to feel that if that's what you need to feel in your life. But don't feel condemned or think that there is no healing, rescue, or way out. Because the Lord is standing here today with a bouquet of roses saying, come. I love you. I'm ready for you and I to be restored and be whole. And I'm ready to pour my wisdom in you so that you can win in your relationships. Would you bow your heads with me across the room? Jesus, I feel you in this place, God. I feel like you're talking to not just a heart, but dozens of hearts in this room. Marriages, husbands, wives, moms, dads, sons, daughters. We want to win. We want to win in our relationships. We see those families and we think, wow, I love what they have. But that's just not us. Could be. You don't have to be them, but you can be who God designed and destined for you to be. And if you want to win with wisdom, then you've got to begin establishing the foundation of reverence and awe before the Lord. And you can't do that. We can't do that, Lord. Holding anyone's hand necessarily, because it is a personal, individual decision. And maybe someone in this room is ready to make that decision today. Maybe somebody's ready to make that choice today. If you are, just pray this with me. Say, Jesus, I never dreamed I could be wise. Never would have described myself as wise. But I'm learning today that you want to give me your wisdom. I receive that. I accept that. Put me back in school. Put me back in a place of learning so that I can grow in my wisdom and ultimately grow in my relationships. Today, Lord, if there's anything in my heart that is competing with your design and your purpose for my life, cancel that and give me what you have for me. If there's any motive, any jealousy, any bitterness, any boasting in me that competes with what you have, I repent of that and accept your mercy because I want to win with wisdom. I want to see your glory in my life and in my relationships. I want to be saved. I want to be whole. I want to be healthy. Not just in my body, but in my heart, in my emotions, in my mind, in my home. I pray it in Jesus' name. And everybody said amen.